Another campus shooting shines a light on legislation in Florida allowing students to carry guns. A JEA board member tells Mayor Curry she won't resign. And Duval student test scores are in, and they're not so good. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and now subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday Roundtable. Then later, we'll tell you how opera, yes, opera, is coming to the Duval County Public Schools. Plus, some celebrity appeal at the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our weekly roundtable here today. Fred Matthews, who writes for The Examiner. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
Larry Hannon of the Florida Times Union is here.
Good to be here.
Matt Shaw, editor at Folio Weekly.
Hi, Melissa.
And our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Good morning.
Guys, great to see all of you, and plenty of news from the week to discuss. From another showdown between a local independent board member and the Lenny Curry administration, to some good news for downtown Laura Street, getting a big honor. But first this morning, the fatal shooting of at least seven people at an Oregon community college is now another example of a school shooting that both supporters and opponents of proposed campus carry legislation in Florida are going to point to when they make their case to lawmakers. The legislature is looking at a measure that would allow people with concealed weapon permits to bring their firearms on public college and university campuses. This is moving through the legislature in Tallahassee. We want your calls on this. What do you think about this as we discuss the tragedy in Oregon and the campus shooting? Give us a call with your thoughts, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. We hope to welcome UNF President John Delaney on Monday to the program to discuss this. Florida State University President John Thrasher, former state senator, has come out against this, actually bucking his party for the most part on this measure. Your thoughts?
Well, that would be quite interesting. But do they have the votes? Is anybody going to be in favor of this? As we saw the president yesterday afternoon, angry about this and telling the nation that he's had to come out and do this time after time. He hopes he doesn't have to do it again before the end of his term, but undoubtedly he can't promise you that he won't. But here in Florida, as it is all around the country, legislators have dug in and they've decided that they're going to support whatever the NRA puts forth, and in Florida is no different. If former Speaker Thrasher and former State Attorney John Delaney are serious, they will gather votes and not just stand on the corner and say what they're against, because votes is what will change this, not simply standing on the corner and saying I'm against it.
Larry Hannon, last night, President Obama addressed the nation saying he's tired of talking about this, saying Congress needs to act. He also challenged the media to change the way they talk about these shootings, saying that we should compare the number of Americans killed in shooting sprees to the number of Americans killed in terrorist attacks. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, it's about as angry as I've ever seen the president be. I mean, he was angry, he was frustrated, and I think a lot of people in this country are just fed up with these shootings. They don't understand why this routinely happens in the United States and doesn't happen in other countries. But this is a very polarizing issue. There are people who passionately believe that if more people had guns, this would not be a problem. And there are people who believe only stronger gun control can solve this problem.
Matt Shaw, Eric Friday, Florida Carry's Jacksonville-based general counsel, will join us Monday. And he notes that Oregon laws that allow concealed weapons on college campuses would not have prevented this shooting. That's his point of view.
Yeah, my experience in college was that you impress your classmates with your hacky sack prowess and strumming an acoustic guitar on the lawn, not with the caliber of your pistol that you're carrying.
Gosh, where'd you go to school?
But I mean, you know, but the idea that arming students or having students with concealed weapons on campus would have prevented this attack is, I can't think of anything more absurd. Anybody who's been on a college campus anytime recently would look at the students and not think that the Pike fraternity could carry out a tactical counteroffensive to a shooter.
Here's where the lines are. Well, eight states allow guns on campus, including Oregon. Here where the battle lines are drawn, John Burr. Republican lawmakers generally favor these bills. The NRA, Florida Carry, Students for Concealed Carry, that is an advocacy group, backed the bills that are before Florida legislators. Against are professors, student governments, campus law enforcement agencies, and college and university presidents like John Thrasher and John Delaney.
Right. In other words, the people who are most familiar with college campuses and how they run and how they operate and how they should be secured are against the bill. So what does that tell you? I would just ask a question, not that I'm in favor of carrying guns on campus, but I want to ask a question, and that is why – if you qualify for a concealed gun permit, could you not carry it on a school campus when you can carry it just about anywhere else?
Fred.
Well, you can't carry it in the courthouse. You can't carry it into City Hall. You can't carry it anywhere where the legislators are and the judges are. The only person who can carry a gun there is in law enforcement.
But you can carry it into a bank. You can carry it into, you know, any place of business.
Well, there's some banks.
So why is a college campus suddenly off limits?
Well, there's some
banks. And that question has got to be answered for people who support this to get some traction.
If it's a private institution, they have the right to decide what's going to come in there. There are some banks now where you cannot carry a gun in. If you go to some banks now, you go through two locks to get into the bank now. And the lock takes you through a metal detector. And if it's detected that you have a weapon on you, you will not get in that bank.
That's not my bank.
It's in Jacksonville, and they're all over town.
Yeah, you're right. Some banks do have that level of security. Larry.
You know, it's interesting, though, and I'm sure Eric Friday will make this point Monday on your show, that most of the people who do these shootings are not concealed carry people. You know, I can't think of a single one where it turned out someone had a license to carry a concealed weapon. It's usually someone who's had mental health issues who ends up stealing guns from his parents or something like that and goes nuts. So even though this is an important debate we should have, I'm not really sure either side is right in thinking this will solve the problem.
Matt.
I mean, I agree with that, but I think I think politicians need to be held more accountable on these things. It seems to me that the NRA and gun advocacy groups have so much power in the political system. If you, especially if you're conservative, if you show any weakness on gun control laws, they will bury you in the media. You will get no money from anyone else, and you will not be elected. So,
and I think that's what the president is saying when he's actually reaching out to voters and saying, "Hey, voters, you have to hold your elected officials accountable, you know, to allowing, you know, this free access to guns all over the place." The president is realizing the politics and challenging the voters to change the politics instead of the president and the lawmakers changing the politics.
Yeah. Yeah. I was covering a plea deal yesterday in the Duval County Courthouse of a 15-year-old kid who pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. She shot someone, and both the defense attorney and the prosecutor said to me, one of the problems, this was a Eureka Gardens shooting, is just everyone there has a gun. They're passed out like candy, and that's one of the problems in our society right now is it is so easy to get a gun. And no 15-year-old should have a gun on his own, and most 15-year-olds are idiots anyway. And, you know, the stupidest moment of your life, you do not want a gun in your hand.
Let's go to your calls. Lots of calls to join our Friday Media Roundtable. Bill on the West Side. Hi, Bill. Good morning. Hi, Bill. Are you there? All right. Let's try James on the North Side. Hi, James. Good morning to you.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing, Ms. Melissa?
Doing well, thanks.
I have a question for you. I'm an avid gun owner, and I go to the range and I shoot, you know, just about every other weekend. And I have friends of mine, they have concealed weapons, but they never ever go practice with them. They got them, they got the weapons, and they'll go practice with them. Now, we went out and we shot, and they hit everything except for the target. Now, you're talking about putting, guns in the hands of college students that have concealed weapon permit. And I'll tell you, I've been through tactical classes. I am ex-military. And this is something that has to be trained and taught. If somebody's in that school and they're shooting up the place, everybody, panic is going to set in, and then you're going to have a teenager with a gun with no real tactical training, and how is he going to react? That's why, you guys, I don't think they're looking at that part of it. They're like, well, if we got enough guns in school, then everybody's going to stop firing, and everybody's going to act right, and you have a tactical group that's going to go in there, and everybody's going to coordinate. That's not what's going to happen. You're going to have scared students, and at this point, you're going to have scared students with weapons that really don't know how to use them. And I'll take my comment off there.
Thank you so much. That's James on the north side. Fred Matthews.
The Fourth Amendment doesn't say you have to have tactical training. This is the Fourth Amendment we're talking about.
Second Amendment?
Okay. It doesn't say you have to have tactical training. It says you have the right to bear arms. And that's fundamental to the argument. Now, on top of that, it's just determining how we're going to bear arms, how and who is going to bear arms. And that's the basis of the argument. That's what our country is founded upon. And to their credit, there are people who sincerely believe that's it. The right to bear arms, period. You can't tell me or anything else that what I need to do and how I need to do it. And we as a country have agreed to that. And unless we can find a way, a discussion point about that, that's what makes the whole argument difficult.
What about the recent polling, though, that shows that the majority of Americans are in favor of expanded background checks and more restrictions on gun ownership?
Well, I mean, I think that's a natural reaction to what we've seen the last 5 years, the natural reaction to what President Obama is very frustrated about, obviously. You know, I really think that there's a bigger issue here, and that's mental health. And I don't think it's a huge leap to say that anybody who goes into a public place and starts mass shootings has a mental health issue. You know, we've got to start looking at how we treat mental health in this country and how we can improve that.
Let's go now to Tim and Yuli. Hello, Tim. Good morning.
Hello, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call and to your panel. Thanks as well. You know, we talk about this a lot, and I know my family does, and I'm a gun owner myself, but picture this for 1 second. Just like driving a car at 16, you have to get licensed, you have to take a test, you have to do all of these things, but the one thing you have to do is get insurance. Why can't we liken that to the same thing as driving a car, whereby you have to take a test, you have to get the gun insured, and vice versa, so that, you know, at least there's some type of control on the gun. I mean, it's not a cure-all, because I know there's a lot of people that could nitpick that apart. But, I mean, it might be a start to say, you know what, let's get the insurance company involved, let's get other entities involved, so that there is some type of control on these guns that are actually being distributed around the country. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks so much, Tim.
Kind of dovetail into what Fred said before, you don't have a constitutional right to drive a car. The Second Amendment does give you a constitutional right to own a gun. And so restricting that right is very difficult.
What would you insure, though?
Yeah.
Phil in San Marco. Go ahead, Phil.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to share my perspective. I work at the University of North Florida, and everyone I've talked to about this, we're all frankly terrified by the idea that students will be allowed to carry guns on campus. And, you know, it's not even so much these mass shootings that seem to crop up regularly, because it is true that the people who perpetuate those shootings usually have serious mental health issues, and they manage to get guns one way or the other, and they plan these shootings in advance. What worries us is, you know, we all deal with students who are often frustrated, they're upset, they're often not entirely stable emotionally, and the idea that we have to deal with students on a regular basis who may in fact be carrying weapons and may have lapses of judgment just terrifies us. So, you know, the faculty union is working hard to represent the faculty in Tallahassee, and I just hope that reason prevails in this situation, because there's really no good argument in favor of allowing guns on campus. You know, it doesn't actually interfere with the rights of gun ownership. It's really a question of making places safe where there are serious potentials for conflict that could escalate. And I think that's what we're concerned about. And I'll take any responses offline.
Thanks. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, I think one of the points about this is, like, who's asking for this? Who wants this? Are there students marching on campus like we want to be able to carry guns on campus? I mean, you're talking about an age where you're a lot of people are the most politically active they're ever going to be in their entire life, and nobody is asking for this. And
there is one group that I'm aware of, Students for Concealed Carry.
Are they at University of North Florida?
That I don't know. That I don't know. I'll find out, though.
And we did have a student, I don't think she was at UNF, but I may be wrong about that, who sued arguing she had the right to keep a gun in her car.
She was at UNF.
She was at UNF.
Yeah.
And you know, she won that lawsuit. The First District Court of Appeal ruled that her constitutional right allows her to keep a gun in her car. And you know, so there are students who want to have guns on campus.
Dawn emails the show, "Don't forget there are those in college that are over the age of 25, capable of carrying a concealed weapon responsibly. Think of a single mom who lives alone, enrolled in a night class. Can she not keep her small weapon on her person as she walks to and from her car? Don't stereotype students," she writes. Let's go now to Richard in Riverside. Hello, Richard.
Hi. I believe that the mental health is the thing we need to focus on. We can have guns and guns, and that would be okay, but the thing is that everybody, if necessary, needs to be, well, I don't know, psychoanalyzed or anything before they can even get out on the streets. I mean, good Lord, this is getting to be a problem here. I don't think just licensing guns is going to do the trick.
All right. Thanks, Richard. And the lines are actually jammed up on this issue. No surprise.
Right.
But we do need to move on and touch on a few other headlines from the week, particularly that showdown between Mayor Lenny Curry and JEA board member Lisa Weatherby. It looks as though this one's going to end with city council members deciding whether Weatherby stays or goes from the utilities board. Now, Weatherby told Curry in a sharply worded letter delivered Thursday by her attorney, Bill Shepard, that she would not resign. She says Curry is injecting partisan politics into the makeup of independent authority boards. Curry had asked for Weatherby's resignation after she refused a meeting with him. This came after a Times Union report that revealed that JEA board members were given scripted talking points in advance of their public meetings. Now, of course, Lisa King on the city's planning commission has also refused to step down. So there are now two women on these independent boards who have thrown their fate before the Jacksonville City Council and have defied the mayor. Larry Hannon, how do you see this playing out?
I mean, it's interesting because Curry is now going to have to expend political capital if he wants to get these women off these boards. And I think he has more important things to do with you. You know, you only have so much political capital as an elected official. Is it really that important to get them off these boards? You know, if it means you're going to struggle to get council to approve something else down the line, it just seems as though this is a battle he doesn't need to fight. Just wait until their terms are over and appoint someone else to replace them.
More to the point that it's two women, it's two Democrats. And, you know, that raises a very strong partisan edge to all this. And it's something that has not been seen in Jacksonville to the extent of removing people who are already in place. Yes, people whose terms expire, new mayor certainly can put in whoever they want. But this hasn't been done before where people in the middle of their terms are being asked to resign or forced to resign.
And it's 549-2937 to call in. Fred Matthews, what do you think about all this?
Well, imagine the argument, aside from the fact that, you know, we've had this discussion about the mayor's right to do what he needs to do with his own people. But imagine the argument that the initial concern is that the JEA board members somehow conspired in the shade to have these scripted discussions in the sunshine. But the mayor wants to have a shade meeting with the board members so that he can ask them what. And the board member says, well, let's have it in the sunshine. And the mayor's spokesman says, well, we can't have meaningful dialogue in the sunshine, apparently. We have to have it in the shade. So imagine this kind of juxtaposition of argument. Is it going to be in the sunshine or not? What does the mayor want to talk to them about? Why doesn't he tell us?
Yeah, and from the JEA's perspective, they can't script a meeting in the sunshine either. So you got to do that in the shade. So, yeah.
Well, I think now let's be clear, Larry. the report in the Times Union that brought this forward that the mayor says he's very concerned about. I believe it quoted someone saying that it did raise concerns about potential violations to the state sunshine law, although I believe the expert said no, there was no official violation of the state sunshine law.
Right. What's interesting is that this actually is a valid concern. The mayor,
but a valid concern.
Yeah. But, you know, to a certain extent, the mayor is now in a difficult position because he's already tried to force these other people off these other boards. So rather than people saying, oh, what's going on at JEA, they're saying, why does the mayor keep forcing these people off the boards? And had he not done this with other boards and organizations, you know, his pushing for her to resign would not necessarily seem as heavy-handed. But now it just seems as though he's doing the same thing again, even though this really is a slightly different situation.
Matt Shaw.
Yeah, I think Larry's point about expending political capital that he may not need to expend at this time is a valid point. And the more than that, the perception of the mayor and his practices now is really tarnished, and it seems, whether it's the reality or not, the tone of partisanship has really been turned up.
And that whether or not that's true, will the city council, a brand new city council, by the way, will they lose political capital by bucking this mayor and supporting these board members, these defiant board members, over the mayor?
They very well might. I don't know about losing capital. Look, all this really points to the weakness of the Democratic Party here in Duval County and in Florida as a whole. I mean, you know, you talk about losing political capital from the mayor. The mayor doesn't care because the Democrats don't have any political capital here. Let's face it.
Yeah. Fred.
I have to agree with John. I mean, there's no reason for the city council not to approve the mayor's appointment and the mayor's will. And in the case of, again, these are supposedly independent authorities, but everybody knows they're not independent. So let the mayor have what he wants to have. I mean, and again, we have a majority Republican city council. They can say what they want, but that their first rule is what? We always support a Republican. You don't vote for a Democrat. They're you have to take that pledge. And if you go and do something against a Republican mayor, you're going against your oath.
They're going to close ranks very quickly.
Well, you could also make the argument that these Democratic women are trying to strengthen their local party by taking this very public stand. I guess you could view it through that lens. Larry Hannon.
This is absolutely this is a political battle. There's no question about it. You can, you know, question whether the Planning Commission should be interfered with, whether JEA should be interfered with, but this all comes down to raw politics.
Let's go now to Rex on the north side. Hi, Rex. Good morning.
Good morning. So I just want to say that I am a Republican, and usually when I come to these type of situations, I want the best person in there for the city. And right now, it's been experienced that Lisa King is the best person for this position. Mr. Atkinson has a very impressive resume, and I think he could come in with a learning experience and do a good job. But at this time, I think it's respectful to let the people on the commission finish their term and when they're supposed to expire. And that's just my thing. I don't want it to be Democrat against Republican. I want the best person in there for the city, and I think that's the best way to do it if I was Mary Curry. So that's what I just wanted to let you know, and you could take that just for me. I live in the North District, and I'm very much involved with the LUZ, and I have experienced Lisa King at her best, and I think she is the one that's a very fair person when it comes to zoning issues.
Thank you, Rex. That's Rex on the north side. David on the south side. Hi, David.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thanks.
Thank you. I'd just like to make a comment that shade meetings are covered by the statutes of Florida, and I haven't read it in a while, but they list certain reasons for the meeting, but in all cases, after that reason is over with, what happens has to be made public. So we're pretty bad about following the statutes here. but please look at them, follow them, read them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, David. Well, let's move on and touch quickly on the first round of results from the Florida Student Assessment Test. That's the test that replaced the FCAT for the state students. Duval County did not do so well. Let's talk about the results. In reading, 30% of Duval County 3rd through 10th graders scored in the bottom 25%, more than any other district in Northeast Florida. Only 21% of Duval kids scored in the top quartile for reading. Superintendent Nicolai Vitti wrote a scathing letter to local principals saying he has little confidence in the relevancy of this due to what he calls the state's inappropriate transition to a new assessment system fraught with limited and contradictory information, inadequate field testing, and alignment to the new standards. You and our students deserve better, says Vitti.
Well, you know, I don't know the details of this test and the procedures anywhere close as the superintendent does. However, you know, this is an apples to apples comparison. Everybody took the same tests in the state of Florida, and if Duval County is coming in at the bottom or near the bottom on math and reading, that is a bad sign, and it's not where we want to be, and it's a huge issue for this city.
At the same time, this whole test has been a disaster for the last year. The implementation of it, the way it was done, I mean, there was just so many things that just didn't go well with it that I think Vitti has a point in saying this may not be an accurate reflection of where the school system is at. John is absolutely right in saying the fact that we ranked low is a bad sign.
Yeah.
But this whole situation has been so compromised, I'm just not sure how seriously it can be taken.
And Fred, Vitti's joined by superintendents from all over the state, quite frankly, that are raising loud objections.
And it's kind of surprising. You would think that the superintendents would have had more input in putting this together than they did, but the State Board of Education basically is a separate entity who came up with this replacement for the FCAT, which everybody abhorred because it was always about the students basically having to test for the test every day. We needed to get rid of it. It was causing teachers pain. So now they come up with this. And, you know, it's going to – so what are the students to do? What are the parents to think? Where are their children coming out in this? And that's the problem we have here now with our superintendent decrying the test. So is it valid? Is it going to carry to the next year? How's it going to affect that 10th grader who has to put this score in his 12th grade transcript?
The Jacksonville Public Education Fund is tweeting the show right now saying, remember that what we can learn from – the Florida Standards Assessment Results release is quite limited. Matt Shaw.
Sure. I think teachers are sick and tired of having to teach to this test, and they don't feel that it's a representation of students' gains or how well their students are doing. And so then you come back with a new test that nobody really believes in to begin with. And I think Feedy's right to come out really passionately against this as an indictment of how well Duval County schools are doing.
I will just say again that, you know, everybody in the state of Florida took these flawed tests, and I'll concede they're probably flawed tests. So, but it's an apples to apples measure, and we come out at the bottom. That's something to be concerned about. It's why the charter schools in Duval County are growing very quickly, because parents are frustrated with the quality of education in these public schools we have, and they're moving their kids to an alternative.
Well, we do need to move on and let everyone know about some good news for the urban core. Downtown Jacksonville's Laura Street was named this week one of the 5 best streets in these United States. How about that? Mm-hmm. The street that touches the Landing, City Hall, and the main library got a pedestrian-friendly makeover a few years ago. Now, this great place honor comes from the American Planning Association, a group of thousands of city planners and officials. Very, very nice. Laura Street, one of the 5 nicest streets in America. How about it?
It's a nice feather in Jacksonville's cap.
Yeah, very cool. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around the state. Luckily, never a shortage of material for you. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Now, only in Florida do bars offer free beer until their town's sad sack team finally wins a game. Orlando's hottest bar is The Basement. That's because they're offering free beer during Central Florida games until the Knights finally win one. Just two seasons after a Fiesta Bowl victory over Baylor and one season after a 9-4 campaign, Central Florida is 0-4. The Knights rank dead last nationally in total offense, averaging nearly 50 yards less per game than the next worst team on the list. They've also given up 7 touchdown passes without an interception. So, we have The Basement offering liquid solace to Central Florida fans or anyone who dares watch them play. It's macro brews only, Larry. I know you, I think you're an IPA guy.
I am, yes.
The bar's marketing director tells ESPN that only 50 people showed up to watch last weekend's loss to South Carolina. The bar holds 150. On Saturday, the Knights visit 1-2 Tulane at noon. Vegas has the game as a pick'em.
Isn't that where Blake Bortles went to school? UCLA?
Yes, yes, it is. And finally, only in Florida do fish and wildlife officers respond to a call involving a male-eating monkey. Now, it's not unusual for fish and wildlife personnel in our wacky state to deal with everything from alligators, bears, to ducks, you name it, we've heard it all. But Monday morning, a 911 call reported something even the Sanford Police Department called a little out of the ordinary, a male-eating monkey sitting on top of a neighbor's mailbox. Unsure whether or not the monkey would be aggressive, 5 police officers, along with the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, descended to the home as a precaution. They used a patrol car to block off the road and shook a water bottle in an attempt to lure the monkey away. The tactic worked, but it also led the monkey to climb on top of the police cruiser, where he decided to pull the molding off the car.
Grief.
The monkey's owner, who had a proper permit, joined officers in a wild chase down the street. They were able to finally coax the monkey, identified as Zeke, back into his owner's loving arms.
The monkey should have just eaten candy corn. That would have been better.
Oh, Larry Hannon.
Oh.
And Larry wins the bet.
Yeah.
Little inside joke. Thanks so much, Fred Matthews, Matt Shaw, John Byrne, and Larry Hannon.
The last second.
Have a great weekend, you guys. We'll be right back.
Take care.
The PBS Fall Arts Festival, airing Friday nights on WJCT, is celebrating its 5th season of bringing audiences the best in arts programming. This season includes Unity, the Latin tribute to Michael Jackson, and Danny Elfman's music from the films of Tim Burton. WJCT will host live performances from Atlantic Beach Experimental Theater and Players by the Sea on the main stage of Hemming Park during the 3rd annual Oktoberfest Downtown Art Walk on Wednesday, October 7, beginning at 5 p.m.
Life has enough drama.
I'm pinned under a log. It's across my legs.
Well, you know, we don't have big logs out here. This is the prairie,
all
for
right.
Crying out loud.
And reality.
Okay, we have ricotta biscotti and the Pavarotti and the summa cum laude.
No.
Find a way to forget your troubles.
So you know what, honey? I want you to freeze me.
What?
And gather some friends around the radio this weekend.
A Prairie Home Companion, returning to WJCT this Saturday at 6.
On the next episode of WJCT's Hometown, explore Jackson's Night Market, sample the Candy Apple Cafe, get to know the Volunteers in Medicine, look back with the First Presbyterian Church of Jacksonville, and commune with the Jesse Ball DuPont Center. WJCT's Hometown, Thursday night at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of how the birth control pill was invented. We talk with Jonathan Eig. His book, The Birth of the Pill, How 4 Crusaders Reinvented Sex and Launched a Revolution, comes out in paperback this month. Also, David Edelstein reviews Ridley Scott's new film, The Martian, starring Matt Damon as an astronaut stranded alone on Mars. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a first for our local school system. Douglas Anderson School of the Arts is ready to lift the curtain on Emmy-winning performances from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Now, Jacksonville is the first city in the state and only the third school district in the nation, joining New York and Dallas, where performances from the Met's Live in HD series are broadcast directly into a school auditorium. Pretty exciting. Here to tell us more, we welcome Jillian Lee, Executive Director of Opera Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning.
Jeff Smith, Director of Fine Arts with Duval County Public Schools.
Good morning.
And local philanthropist Lawrence or Lori DeBow. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Jillian, let's start with you. You were able to form a partnership with DCPS to make this happen. How did this all come about?
Yes, well, originally it started with us forming a partnership with the Metropolitan Opera. And we came to DCPS 8 years ago and offered this program. And that was our start. And it's grown to the point where we're going from about 300 children a year to 3,000.
Jeff Smith, this is an incredible opportunity for students at Douglas Anderson, already an incredible art school.
It is. It's a fantastic school, but this opportunity is not only for students at Douglas Anderson School of the Arts. It's for students throughout Duval County, and we're very excited this year in particular. Not only are thousands of students going to have this opportunity, but our elementary students, and we're very excited about the performance of the Magic Flute that will be coming up. So students throughout our county will be able to see these live operas in the upgraded phenomenal auditorium at Douglas Anderson School of the Arts, thanks in large part to Mr. Lori DeBow and the DeBow Family Foundation.
So let's talk about that, Lori. What drove your interest in contributing to this initiative so that more students could enjoy opera?
Well, when I was a 14-year-old living in Chicago, I went to the Chicago Civic Opera House to become an usher. And I did. And, of course, they played everything from Spike Jones to opera. And it was an education for me, and I grew to love opera, and I want to share that with all the students.
Now, a lot of our local students probably have never heard opera before. What do you think the reaction is going to be?
Well, they've been listening to it now for 7 years, so we have a cadre of students who are in love with opera.
Yeah, yeah.
I think our elementary students will be awestruck. I picture a lot of drop jaws, open mouths, just the spectacle that is the Metropolitan Opera producing something of that caliber and that level. I think it will inspire a lot of our children to be interested in not only the history, but the artistry and the musicianship and wanting to pursue that themselves.
Melissa, I love the fact that you said many of these children have never heard opera. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. You go to hear the opera.
And see it.
And see it.
Yeah.
You do see it. It's a spectacle, but it's the music and the singing. That's really what it's about.
Right. And it's so moving. The emotion of this genre, I think, is really what makes it so extraordinary. Would you agree?
I would agree. In fact, if anybody who's listening would like to hear what parents, students, and teachers think about this program, we have up on YouTube, if you just type in Opera Jacksonville, a video where they expound for about 3 minutes about what they think about this program. And it's humorous, and it's also very informative.
This is exciting, too, Jeff, for Jacksonville, because, as I said, only New York and Dallas have this program. We're the only the third city in the nation to have it.
I think it's phenomenal that our city was one of three cities chosen across the country. And obviously that took a lot of work on the part of Opera Jacksonville, Mr. DeBow and the DeBow Family Foundation, our superintendent, Dr. Nikolai Vitti, and our school board. A lot of people working very diligently over the past few years to make this possible. It obviously didn't happen overnight.
So five performances, Lori, 3,000 students will be able to watch and listen.
That's right. And we'll bring them from the public schools throughout Duval County and surrounding counties, also some private schools as well.
And it looks as though as well, the Douglas Anderson School of the Arts Auditorium is getting some upgrades that go along with this project.
Absolutely. Thanks to Lori.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah,
that's right. We're putting new screen, new projector, a new HD sound system, a satellite system, Everything that's required to bring this in from directly from the opera.
Very nice. And not only that, Jeff Smith, you're also forming at the Duval County Public Schools a District Arts Advisory Council. What's that all about?
That is going to be an opportunity for stakeholders throughout the county, parents, caregivers, post-secondary partners, community arts advocates, and professional artists to get involved with what's going on in our school system, to provide guidance and input on our arts education program, such as expanding opera programs. Very excited about the work of Mr. Sean Pendry and all the teachers at La Villa to actually produce their own opera, which is going to be phenomenal in the spring. And so we can provide high quality, excellent programs like that and innovative programs through the work of partnerships. And we're very excited about that.
Very exciting. In the meantime, tomorrow night, the first performance from the Met's initiative is Verdi's Trovatore, and that will be broadcast at Douglas Anderson to invited guests, students, teachers, and donors. Sadly, this is closed to the public. Is that right?
That's correct. Just this one, plus the others. The public, they can continue to go to the theaters and pay for that. This is all about the children.
So the children will get the opportunity to come to the auditorium and take this in. This is going to be so exciting.
The children actually love it, but what we do is we invite teachers to participate. They come to a workshop. Then they teach or they utilize opera to teach their subject area, make it more exciting, and get the children involved utilizing the opera. The children get to see the opera that they learned about.
It's a beautiful example of arts integration, weaving in the history, the music, the visual arts, and really transforming our classrooms, not only for the students, but for our teachers.
And Lori, kudos as well, because this event tomorrow night will also be the official naming of the Lawrence J. Dubow Theater.
That's very, very nice, Melissa.
Yeah, very exciting.
Not my idea, but very nice.
But well-deserved. Yeah. And so thank you all so much for sharing this with us. It's wonderful news.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And we were joined by Jillian Lee, Executive Director, Opera Jacksonville, Jeff Smith, Director of Fine Arts with the Duval County Public Schools, and Lawrence Dubow telling us about the Met Live in HD series broadcasting in the Duval County Public Schools. And we're back in a moment.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know?, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Listeners love Relax Radio.
Hi, I'm Evan Willman. I typically listen to the station when I'm in my home office. I work out of my house a lot. I have my HD radio in there. So this is really the best of all worlds. It gives me my news. It gives me music that constantly delights and surprises me.
When you make a $120 gift to WJCT, you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
WJCT, the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville, and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit now through November 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, DIY Network host Matt Minster is in town this weekend at the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. Minster is the host of the popular show Bath Crashers. He joins us now with some insider tips before you decide to undertake that big remodel at your house. Hey, Matt, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I need this information. We need to do this at our house, big time.
Okay, let's talk.
All right, so the most important question I have is, how do you do this without spending a lot of money?
We don't. We don't go that route at all.
Okay, all right.
You absolutely can, but on the show, I'm trying to blow your doors off. So therefore, budgets are not taken into consideration.
You want a stunning before and after, right?
Exactly, that's the formula. It's been working 200-some episodes long. But to go to your question, how do you do it without spending a lot of money? Oh, it's a tricky room. It's an expensive room. It swallows up money fast.
It really does. Yeah. What is that?
There's nothing in there that's easy. Every trade, every talented trade in the business is involved. Plumbers, electricians, tile people, everyone is involved. And I think in making so many people involved, there's so many stages. Mm-hmm. And the more stages, the more money you spend. But there are some tricks we've learned along the way. One being, if you can avoid moving your plumbing around, if the toilet's in an okay spot, leave it there. That's right. A tricky thing to move. Anytime you start moving stuff around, you start spending some cash. And when you start spending cash on stuff like that, you don't have cash to spend on the fun stuff.
What's the fun stuff?
Oh, God. How much time do you have? Excuse me. The fun stuff is the stuff that makes you want to hang out in there. It's the wine fridge.
The wine fridge in the bathroom?
Well, yeah.
Oh.
It's not just showers in the morning. I'm not a morning wine drinker, but at the end of the day...
Why not?
Why not?
But don't you hang out with Hoda and Kathy Lee?
That they do have that niche locked down.
Yeah.
And maybe they do need one. And if so, Hoda, Kathy Lee, I'm listening. But the wine fridge, the espresso machine, the fireplace, heated floors... TV, music, all of the above.
Sure, the closeted
amenities.
Tub.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Be honest with yourself about the tub. If you're a tubber, and I use tub as a verb often, great. Get yourself an awesome tub. But if you're not, and believe me, there's a small percentage of the population who really are truly tubbers. It's in the teens, and that's being generous.
I am one.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You're in the teens.
Yeah. I'm in the minority.
You're in the deep minority.
So most people want a nice shower. They want that experience.
That's the thing. And the tub is a big square footage killer in a bathroom. If you don't use it, be honest with yourself, put that big killer shower in and love it all day long.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's the most popular remodel project then?
It is a shower.
Anytime
you can spend money in the shower, that's where you're going to get bang for your buck. Get a bench in there. Get some storage in there. Frameless glass. Get some multiple shower head action going on. Enjoy that experience. Get a speaker in there for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you can listen to you.
Oh yeah,
this is the morning,
I'm here.
Right?
How can I take a shower while listening to myself?
The people that do, and you're very very popular. The people that do will be showering with your voice in their ear.
Now, how did you get into this?
Oh, I was in the right place at the right time.
Really?
I didn't pursue this at all. It's a strange story, and anyone that really wants to do this for a living hates this story, but I answered my phone one day. I was sitting in an architecture office. My degree's in interior design. That's what I do, and I answered my phone. Someone, a local production company, wanted to know if I ever wanted to do anything on TV. They were looking for a designer.
Really?
And that's...
And were you in New York or something? Or
Minneapolis.
Minneapolis,
where I still am. And a lot of this stuff happens there, and I told them no. That was my initial gut reaction.
How come?
I'm a farm kid from Wisconsin.
You're this Minnesota nice guy.
Yeah, and being on TV, being public speaking, all that stuff sounds horrifying to me. At least it did at the time. So
How long ago was this? Like 3 years ago or
no,
some
this
crazy
is like seven
short
years
time
ago now.
Okay.
7-8 years ago now. And they were relentless. They wanted me to come meet with them. So I did. Next thing I know, they've got a camera in my face and they shot this little 3-minute thing. They sent it off to the network.
How'd they find you?
We had a small architecture firm, design firm, but we had a really good website. So there was pictures of us all over it. So someone saw a photo. Someone Googled interior design Minneapolis and hit images.
And your photo was so cute that they said that's the one.
It wasn't a great pick. I had sideburns at the time. It was very profile-y, but
and that's another verb that he just made up. Profile-y.
It was very profile-y. It was not good, but it was enough to get someone to call.
Wow.
And I went in.
How
and
cool
it
is
happened.
That?
It just kind of happened.
So Bath Crashers has taken off.
Yeah, a little bit.
You're really enjoying it. It sounds like it's really exciting.
It's a blast. I didn't realize how much I didn't like knowing what every day looked like when I woke up. Every day is different.
Now you're married. I see a ring.
I am.
But
yes.
You probably have a big female fan base.
I have. It's equally split.
Really?
Yes, I have a lot. It's surprising. Well, it's hard to know. Other than like social media where you can actually look at it and see kind of who's who. But I don't know. They keep putting us, ordering more episodes. We're just finishing the 12th season of Bath Crashers right now. And between all the Crashers shows, we're over 500-600 episodes. So someone's watching.
Well, what's next? What are you going to crash next?
I don't
the driveway?
Know. I don't know what's left.
You know, the ice fishing shack in Minnesota.
I've
can you remodel one of
it.
Those?
Don't think
maybe?
I haven't pitched that
You know
idea.
That movie Grumpy Old Men? Can
yes.
you hang out with Burgess Meredith and the shack?
Oh, wouldn't it be great?
Is he still alive?
No, I don't think so. Neither is. Who else is no longer around from Grumpy Old Men?
I think they're mostly gone, sadly.
I think they're all gone.
I love that movie so
I did too,
much.
And that was shot in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But there was.
But you could remodel that.
I could bring
That's
back.
Your area. That's
I just need
your
to get.
State.
I need to get a little older and a little grumpier.
And
I'm on my way on both tracks. Trust me.
Well, in the meantime, you're going to be a huge hit at the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show. What now? Are you speaking today?
I'm speaking this evening at 6.
Tonight.
Yep.
Okay.
Tomorrow at 2 and 5, and Sunday at noon.
All right. It's Matt Minster, DIY Network star and host of the popular show Bath Crashers. Go see him at the Jacksonville Home and Patio Show at the Prime Osborne. A big hand for Matt Minster.
You guys.
Thanks
you.
So much for
Thank
being
you.
With us. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Next on Diane Rehm, a look at the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.